Hello, everyone. You are listening to the John and Joe Show podcast. My name is John Kerr, publisher of the Kerr Report newsletter. I am joined now by the Joe portion of the John and Joe Show. Proud Mundelein Mustang, Northern Illinois Husky, Daily Herald alumnus, and ABC7 morning show commentator, Joe Aguilar. Joe, how are you?
Doing well, John. Thanks. It's football weather, isn't it?
It is.
We should be playing football, but we're not playing football. But speaking of which, it kind of leads to our guest this morning.
Yeah, we're playing one-hand touch football, Joe. My little guys, my kids are sixth graders. Okay, we got doubleheader on Friday night, so feel free to come up, okay, for the Friday Night Lights. Would much rather be watching tackle, all right? So we're gonna get into that conversation here with our guest here. There's a lot going on here in the state of Illinois regarding the return to play. And yesterday, we're recording this on September 30th. So on Tuesday the 29th, the class action lawsuit was filed in DuPage County Court. The lawsuit is against the Illinois High School Association. And we're going to talk to one of the defendants of that lawsuit. His name is Dave Ruggles. He joins us right now. Hey, Dave, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Hey, we're doing great. Give us the latest on the lawsuit and what do you hope to happen tomorrow in a DuPage County Court?
Yeah, so this case is being brought in DuPage County tomorrow morning. I think it's at 9 o'clock. It's got its hearing. We're seeking a temporary restraining order, excuse me, on the IHSA, which if we win, we'll flip the calendar back to the original calendar, which is fall football, soccer, and volleyball. At that point, they would then have to address what they're going to do from there. They've explained, including Craig Anderson, the head of the IHSA, has stated it publicly, that they're ready to go with a fall schedule. So they think they've got it figured out. They're essentially waiting for Governor Pritzker to give them the nod to say to go ahead and resume controlling what you've always controlled up to this point. So we don't think the IHSA is really going to fight this thing, but we don't know what Pritzker is going to do. He's really the only obstacle in the entire Midwest who is stopping anybody from competing athletically, essentially in these three sports.
Hey, Dave, it's Joe Aguilar. Thanks again for joining us. What we've seen from Governor Pritzker is that, he digs his feet in and he's not budging. I mean, despite all these rallies we've had, despite all the rhetoric, all the conversation, what do you think will happen? And I notice he's not mentioned in the lawsuit either, nor is the IDPH. Can you kind of explain why that's the case? And what do you think he'll do? Because history... I'm like you. I want us to play, get back in the classroom, all that stuff. But he's a big dude, and he's not moving.
Right. Well, by suing the IHSA for not following their bylaws, we can get an immediate restraining order and bring immediate action to this thing. If we go after anybody else, it starts to get into a lot of time, and time's not on our side. Right. Look, he's the only one that sees things the way he sees them. And his IDPH, their guidelines are absurd. They've been absurd for a long time. They make it very difficult for these schools to reopen and for sports to be played. I think they're put in place by people who, have never really been out in the real world and don't understand kind of what's going on. I mean, if you look at the science of this thing, the same science that the governor in Indiana and Wisconsin and Michigan and every other Midwest state is looking at, Governor Pritzker sees it differently. He looks and focuses on this positivity rate. Ours is around 3.7, 3.6, something like that. Indiana's is 3.9, roughly. Indiana's been open for football and school since, football in the middle of July and school in early August. So if there and it's remained steady. So if there's going to be this massive, outbreak that's going to occur from having kids go back to school and go back to playing sports, we could look at an actual real-world situation in Indiana and states like Florida where their positivity rate has actually dropped while they're playing football and back in school and have real data instead of speculating. For whatever reason, Governor Pritzker doesn't want to look at the real data. He keeps talking about follow the science and what his doctors and scientists and experts say. But he's got a small group of experts who are saying this, and everybody else has got a bigger group of experts who say the opposite. And the data really doesn't lie about this. So, the kids have little to no risk health-wise from this virus. That's just a fact, okay? If you're concerned about them transmitting it to others, you're operating under the premise that they're not out playing these sports across state lines and not hanging out with their buddies and not socializing already to some degree. which is clearly what they are doing. All you got to do is go to downtown Naperville or downtown Wheaton or downtown anywhere, and you see people are out and about living their lives. So this idea that that transmission wouldn't already be occurring is simply false, okay? So I don't know what his problem is with fall sports. I don't know. I mean, I hate to decouple football from volleyball and soccer, but I mean, how you can consider girls volleyball as a contact sport is clearly a rule put in place by somebody who's never played a single game of volleyball in their life. Okay. I mean, that's absurd. How, you know, girls soccer playing outside. Yes, there's some contact, but you're outside. You know, there's zero transmission that has been proven to occur in soccer games. I mean, there's actually studies on this and there's zero proof that it occurs. So, you know, realistically, he's going to do what he's going to do as the governor. And, you know, this might give him the opportunity to recalibrate his thinking, because, you know, hunkering down on something like this, being the only guy or only governor left who's got this stance, is a political hill that he could die on. You know, this goes across party lines. This isn't just Republicans. This is Democrats and independents who are looking at this and saying, this isn't right. This isn't fair, you know, and he's, you know, what, how is he even coming to this conclusion? You know, and I'll say one more thing on this thing. The people who are paying the biggest price on this are the poorest among us. Okay. The inner city kids are not in school. They're not logging on. Okay. The first week there were schools that had 50% or more who didn't log on once in the entire week. Okay. They're not at school. They're not able to they're not getting the meals that they receive at some of these schools. They're the first line of defense on domestic abuse situations. That's not being caught. They're not around mentors and coaches and teammates and structure. Okay. They're out in the streets. They're getting recruited by gangs. They're getting shot and killed. They're not getting educated. And all the governor wants to talk about is pot licenses. So, I mean, if you really look at this thing, it looks to me like he wants the poorest among us to be dumb and stoned. That's his platform. And if that's the platform we want as a state for, you know, for our kids, and especially the ones that are the least fortunate amongst us, then that's a state I'm not really excited to live in, you know, and I think a lot of other people feel the same way.
Our guest is Dave Ruggles. He's one of three West Suburban parents who filed a class action lawsuit against the IHSA Tuesday in DuPage County Court, that being September 29th. And October 1st, which is Thursday, is when this case, a decision expected to be rendered, I guess, by a Judge Fullerton in a courtroom in DuPage County, set for 9 a.m. And Dave, to follow up on what you just said there, in order for the judge to grant this temporary restraint, there are legal standards, right? I mean, there are some things you must establish, right, within this for the judge to grant this temporary restraining order. And there is some precedent for this. You cite this in the actual TRO of a couple cases. What makes you confident that Judge Fullerton will be able to grant this TRO on Thursday? And then immediately, what needs to happen here? Are we talking, do you want to hear from the IHSA? Are you hoping to get kids back on the football field by next week, or soccer kids and you know, volleyball kids? What are some immediate, maybe 24 to 48 hours or even a week out after, assuming that Judge Fullerton grants his TRO on Thursday?
Yeah, so you got to follow your guideline or your bylaws as an organization like the IHSA. They did not do that, okay? They switched from fall to spring on their own without putting it out to membership. So it's pretty straightforward that they didn't do what they're obligated to do, okay? So that's a technicality, but that's the technicality we expect to win on. At that point, once we win on that, then I think we're kind of giving them the opportunity to take back what they should never have given up in the first place, which they didn't do formally, but they essentially gave up the control by saying, hey, we're going to defer to the IDPH on their guidelines or whatever the case was, and they sort of stepped back. They should never have done that. That was a big mistake. So I think this recalibrates the situation, puts control back in their possession, which I think, you know, which I know for a fact is what they want. And then at that point, you know, they have to decide, do they want to, you know, have a spinal cord and say to the governor, you know, look, we're going to go forward with this. You know, you look at other states like Michigan, Governor Whitmer said, well, I don't agree with this, but the courts weighed in, right? And they're playing. So it just depends on what Governor Pritzker wants to do. As for the way the season would be restructured, I mean, honestly, as a businessman, if you're a business owner and somebody who's been out in the real world, the private sector, his whole life, I could probably figure this thing out in 15 minutes if somebody wanted me to. okay? I would play twice a week. I would play on Wednesday, and I would play on Saturday. This isn't; these aren't NFL football players. These are high school football players. And you could easily ask the kids, do you want to play six games or do you want to play four games? You know, if you want to play six, we got to double up. Are you okay with that? And I think they would probably be fine with it. You know, the coaches might complain a little bit, but those that complain, to me, should stand down. They've been non-existent to some degree in this fight. They're not advocating for the kids either, to be honest with you. Yeah, there's exceptions to that. But really, overall, they're kind of doing what everybody else is doing, which is laying in the, you know, laying on the floor, sucking their thumb, hoping that Dave Ruggles and others can win this for them. And so, you know, they could figure this out. They could work it out. I think there's a time frame that usually I've heard that it's 2 weeks before they can be on the field playing, competing. I think, I could be wrong on this, I think Minnesota had the same type of deal. They changed it to 10. You know, it's a matter of just having a practical approach. I mean, they're already doing contact days, so they're already out on the field. So, you know, in the reality of it is the execution of it is a separate issue. But, you know, what you have to have first is like Indiana. The resolve to say the kids are going to be back in school, they're going to play sports, and we're going to work backwards from there, okay? Failure is not an option. The problem is in a state like Illinois, you got a bunch of excuse makers and a bunch of guys that don't want to take responsibility or take any, you know, any liability, let's say, and advocate for the kids. So, you know, it kind of depends on what their approach is going to be. This lawsuit hopefully gives them an opportunity, like I said, to get back to the basics here, and maybe it gives Governor Pritzker cover. Maybe he can say, hey, I don't agree that they should be playing, but the courts have weighed in, and, you know, I'm going to go ahead and defer to the courts because that's how our system is set up. You know, that's fine if that's what he wants to do. You know, the main thing that I'm looking for is I'm advocating for people who either can't advocate for themselves or won't. And that is a massive, massive number of people. I mean, it is a massive majority. And, you know, and we're going to go to war for those people and see what happens.
Hey, Dave, I'm curious about the genesis of the lawsuit. Who decided to do it? I know there's two other parents, as John mentioned, Chris Warden and Kelly Ridges, involved in this too. But how did this all start up, and what kind of feedback have you gotten from, I'm thinking football in particular, because, two games in a week sounds ambitious to me for football, but, you know, maybe if that's where we're at, considering where the calendar is now, you know, hitting October on Thursday. But where to start the whole idea of the lawsuit, and what kind of feedback have you gotten, if you've talked to any football coaches in particular?
Yeah, so there's a couple people who've been driving this thing really the entire time. Really, it's myself, it's another Wheaton parent, and then, you know, I think you guys know Joe Trost mm-hmm. has been involved in this thing. We've kind of formed an alliance on this thing, and we've been really driving this. There's been other people who've certainly been involved on the backside and have helped us, but really, what's so scary about this thing, to be honest with you, is if the three of us had said, you know, like everybody else or the majority of everybody else basically threw our arms up, this thing would be dead and buried and these kids would be getting screwed. I mean, it's that simple. And I'm not trying to make myself out to be a hero, but it really is. That's how close we were to not having anything at all happen on behalf of the kids. Okay. So that's really what it came down to. It started with the rally concept, which I put together with some other people. We had a very successful rally in Wheaton. I was then asked to speak at other rallies, about four or five other ones. And then the rally, you know, it was just too fragmented. And, you know, so what we did is we tried to get that, you know, we had to go to phase two, which is basically, okay, the rallies did their thing. They got this into the news. But now we need to try to finish this thing. And the only way we can do it is by utilizing the court system. What's the quickest way to do that? Okay. As far as the football community, we could have put 1,000, maybe 5,000 people on this lawsuit as plaintiffs with us. Okay. That's how many people reached out to us to say, hey, I'm interested in being involved. What can I do to help? I mean, it's a massive number. All right. But that just wasn't the way we decided to go. So it put me as the main plaintiff, so I can kind of be the front man on this thing and kind of talk everybody through it. I think everybody's ready to go. I think there's probably some programs that maybe wouldn't be. You know, I believe in Wisconsin, there's some programs who are playing in the spring and some that are playing in the fall. I mean, thing that's important here, if you don't feel safe playing sports or you don't feel safe going to school, then don't. We're not telling you have to do it. The problem is that the vocal militant minority in this state is trying to tell the rest of us how to live our lives, okay? And that's just not how it works in this country, you know? And so that's really where, from my vantage point, my passion is to push back on that, because these are the people who show up to the board meetings at the schools and everything else, push their agenda, while the 70 or 80% majority goes on with their lives and lets these people dictate the situation. And we let that get away from us in this state, and we have to take that back. And that's really what we're doing. And that's, from that vantage point, it's been successful. But now it's time to get these people who are in charge to buck up and do the right thing for the kids. I mean, that's really what it is. It's about the kids.
Our guest is Dave Ruggles. Again, he is one of three West Suburban parents. Dave is based in Wheaton, who filed a class action lawsuit against the IHSA and hoping to get a ruling by Thursday. Again, we're recording this on September 30th, so by October 1st, have an idea of what's going to happen next. And Dave, you made an interesting point about the return to learn, because there's two different coinciding movements here. Right, which is return to learn, get in classroom, and then return to play, get back on the field. If you're looking for any clues as to what the governor is thinking, which has been difficult, right, and also now he's I think in quarantine now for a couple of weeks, with due to some contact tracing, due to I think a staffer or something who tested positive. So who knows if we're going to hear from him right over the next couple of weeks, but with what he's been saying, there's not much to really kind of look at. But I think but he could certainly answer questions about the lawsuit. But my question this is, he did say at a recent press conference that I want to get kids back in the classroom. That when he was pressed on this topic, he said we need to get kids back in the classroom. So how much of that you think is tied into this? Because where I live in here, there are rallies going on in Libertyville. There's one in Mundelein next week. There was one in Glenview, which I attended last week. And so do you get a sense of that the return to play is tied into getting kids back in the classroom? So regardless of what happens on Thursday, if we're thinking about winter sports or spring sports, if the governor is going to relent on this and back off from his stubborn stance, we need to see more either school boards begin to trickle kids back in the classroom through some kind of a hybrid model, working towards in-person learning full time. What are your thoughts on that and sort of the how things tie in there and how things maybe are out there in Wheaton, where you live in Wheaton South or Wheaton North, with kids in the classroom?
Yeah, I mean, look. You know, it's funny because he talks about, we haven't made this political at all, but he talks about how Trump hasn't had a national policy towards the virus. And then he runs his state without a policy. I mean, he could do like Cuomo and say the schools are going to reopen, make it happen. And I think they would reopen. Okay. His own IDPH guidelines are what's cited by Wheaton, Warrenville South and Downers Grove North for sure. Their superintendents as reasons why they can't reopen. Okay, they can't comply. So he's actually the reason these people aren't in school. And what's ironic about that is he's the champion of the poor and he's the champion of the less fortunate, and they're the ones getting totally left behind by this. Okay, they're getting screwed by this system. They're not logging on, they're not getting educated. So to answer your question, they are linked. You're not going to play football if you can't even get your butt in class. Okay, and so it needs to be a two-tiered approach, and I really look at it as both. I mean, I can't believe we as a society are accepting the e-learning, or I call it e-not-so-much learning program. It's a total joke. You know, the rich kids cheat. The poor kids don't log on. You know, there's no supervision at home. There's no direction. It's not a challenge. There's no socializing with other people. There's no competition. You know, all the things that you learn from an education and all the things that you learn from sports are being lost right now. Well, everybody holds their hands up and says, well, there's these metrics that, you know, that we're going to have to follow, you know, that are not even real metrics in some cases. You know, I mean, if you look at the positivity rate, you've probably heard me say this. My son had this virus. He was at a college in Iowa. Okay. He's a senior. He quarantined. He felt like he had allergies. He quarantined for 14 days in Iowa. He's counted as a DuPage County positive case because he lives in Wheaton. Now, if we're going to use a number like that to dictate what the policy is, we should try to make sure it counts only people who are actually in the area that you're affected by, right? I'm not even sure it's not counted in Iowa too. I mean, I'm not saying that there's a devious plot here, but we're talking about bureaucracies that can't get out of their own way and couldn't run a one-car funeral. So is there any doubt that that he's being counted as a case in Iowa and a case in DuPage County? Take another situation. You get five positive tests because you have to have a negative before you go back to work. Okay? Five positive tests over 5 days. Do you think that's one case or five? It's five. I mean, that's been confirmed by doctors and medical systems. They can deny it, but that's counted as five. So your positivity rate is garbage. You know, and yet they hide behind this number as if it's straight out of the Bible. We have to follow this particular number. And that's the kind of, you know, ludicrous approach to this thing that just completely doesn't advocate for the kids, throws the kids under the bus because nobody wants to step out and say what has to be said. I mean, if you think about the inner city kids, who is speaking out about their situation right now? I mean, honestly, other than me, John, I'm a rich suburban white guy, and I care more about the inner city kids than, you know, anybody who's supposed to be advocating for them, the teachers, the administrators, the coaches, you know, the governors, whatever. These people don't care. And they obviously don't care. I mean, and it's maddening. The education gap in this country is big. We're making it bigger. And all we're going to do is throw our hands up and blame this virus that essentially impacts a very small subset of our society. That's just the reality.
Yeah. Well, Dave, I love your passion, man. I'll tell you what, I mean, you know, and I guess no matter where you stand on this, I mean, I always appreciate guys like you who will take a stand, who will be passionate about something, and I don't know where your heart's at. I mean, it's for the kids. And we should note, too, that you don't even have a son who plays football. Your son is a basketball player at Wheaton Warrenville South. So, and I got to ask you about basketball because before you know it, that's here already. I think we're like 6 weeks away from the scheduled start of basketball. What's your gut feeling that just what's going to happen going forward, whether it's regarding the decision tomorrow, hopefully, or for the next, you know, the rest of the calendar year here?
Basketball season is going to be a total joke. If football doesn't get moved back to the fall, you're probably looking at a conference-only schedule with maybe a conference tournament at the end and no state tournament, okay? The basketball community is about to get blindsided by what's coming down the tracks at them, okay? It's not going to happen. If you can't play indoor volleyball when it's 70 degrees outside, you're not going to play indoor basketball when it's, you know, 30 degrees outside and we're in flu season. You know, and if you think about the ridiculousness of the football decision, they're trying to tell us it's safer to play football starting in the middle of February when there's 20 inches of snow on the ground and it's 25 degrees outside, where people are going to be slipping, falling. There's going to be programs that can't clean the fields, whatever the case is, and you're in the heart of the flu season. That's safer than playing football now when it's 65 degrees outside and sunny. I mean, it's just the people that think that this is all going to play out and it's well, hopefully it works out. They got their head in the sand. And this is the part that to me is so enraging about this issue is that I can see what's coming because I anticipate this. I think you guys can see what's coming. And there's just this huge swath of our society that somehow is operating under the assumption this is all going to work out. And it just isn't. All you have to do is look at the way the governor and these people are behaving, and you can see that the seasons are in jeopardy. And, you know, look, there's going to be a mass exodus out of this state. I don't think they care about that. You know, it's not really something that's going to point to, you know, that they're going to hammer on. But you know what? You know who's not going to be able to move? The poor kids in the suburbs and the poor kids in the inner city. They can't move, you know. So they're going to miss this year. You know, I brought up a situation, Jimmy Butler. Okay, there was a little snippet out on him the other day. Homeless at 13, one scholarship offer, faxed in his letter of intent from a McDonald's. You know, I think he got adopted or taken over guardianship by a family up north or something. But let's say that Jimmy Butler's senior year, Governor Pritzker was the governor. Is there any question that Jimmy Butler would not be in the NBA right now? Right? And he's making probably $30 million a year. Imagine how many people he's helping with his $30 million a year salary, how many family members and other people around him that he's taking care of. And that kid is probably on the street or maybe dead if Governor Pritzker was the governor his senior year. How many Jimmy Butlers are there right now in the city of Chicago or in the suburbs of the poor areas? He wasn't a superstar. There's nobody that thought Jimmy Butler was going to the NBA coming out of high school. Nobody. Right? So no, there are cases. There are real world cases like this that we're playing out right before our eyes, and nobody cares. I mean, when I say that, you know, the people who are in charge don't care.
Yeah, and I think, Dave, it's complicated with those people in charge, and not to defend what they're doing, but when you've got public employees, teachers, superintendents, even coaches, I mean, they're public or even private school coaches, that's their part-time job, right? I mean, these people are full-time teachers, and we know who is running things in those school districts. And we know who Pritzker's biggest supporter was, right, when he was elected governor a couple of years ago. So we talk about it, you know, it all goes back to some sort of political, you know, threads here. I've been very disappointed in the lack of leadership from superintendents who have not spoken out. That's what changed things in Michigan when right. You had the Detroit Public Schools superintendent. Can I
chime in on that real quick, John?
And got them talking. Sure, go ahead.
My mom was a 35-year school teacher, first, second, and third grade in Chicago Heights, one of the worst areas in the state, okay? She was union president for 10 years, okay? I grew up in a single head of household, school teacher's house, 600 square feet, lots of very difficult times, okay? She spoke at the Orland Park rally, and she said, you start with the premise that the kids must be in school and must be able to play sports, and you get everybody who matters in a room and figure out how to make that work, okay? So there are people in that area who don't agree with me politically on many issues, but understand that the kids are getting thrown under the bus here. And those teachers that you're referring to, there are teachers who believe that these kids should be in school, but you're right. And you know what? If they end up being the problem, let's say in Chicago, then they get thrown under the bus by me as well. Because you know what? Your job is to educate the kids and keep the kids safe and develop productive adults in our society. And you are failing miserably at that right now. So whatever your excuses are, whatever your alibis are and your reasons are, you know, thank God the nurses, the doctors, the police, and the firefighters didn't throw their hands up and panic at the first sign of this virus and say, I can't go to work, right? Because where would we be right now? Right? These people are essential workers, these teachers. And I think a lot of them realize that, and shame on any of them who don't. And by the way, if you have a problem as a teacher, if you are at risk, then you be the one that teaches the online kids. Okay. And there's lots of ways to work this out. If you don't want to be in the classroom, put a parent volunteer in there, have the teacher stream in the lesson and get it done. If you want to put a teacher in a hazmat suit, tell us what that costs and we'll probably approve it. Okay. I mean, if that's what you want, tell us what you want, but don't come in and try to transform the world and the country politically with your demands. Make the demands about how to keep you safe and how to get kids back in the classroom where they can learn and become productive citizens to our, you know, in our country.
Yeah. And Dave, I agree with you on that. I wholeheartedly, and I was just talking to some coaches over the weekend, and I think, I mean, most of the people who are in education and coaching, they are glass half full people. They are positive thinkers. They are solution solvers. I mean, you know, I mean, this is what they, does that make sense? Solution solver. They're problem solvers. I know there's some people, especially in teaching and administration, who don't feel safe, don't want to go back. Fine. But I think the majority of them are problem solvers. And you know, you're right. I mean, let's focus on the kids getting them back in the classroom. And I guess I'm just surprised that hasn't prevailed. Because I think there are a lot of smart people in school buildings, you know, and if you give them the opportunity to figure it out, even if you keep taking things away, they will figure it out. And I'm actually surprised we haven't, again, that hasn't prevailed.
Well, here's a couple things there. They're getting paid regardless, right? So that's number right. One. You're not hurting their pocketbook like all the businesses that Pritzker's shut down in this state. Mm-hmm. Those people actually have skin in the game. These guys are getting paid. But if you think about the kids, if you think about why there isn't a big case of transmission in the country, in the schools, why is that? Because it's a safe place with mitigation efforts in place and policies in place. The kids are not there, okay? So where are they? They're out and about in society. playing in a basketball tournament in Wisconsin or Hammond, Indiana, or soccer tournaments in these things where there aren't the mitigation steps necessary. So actually, you're putting them more at risk. They're on the streets in Chicago hanging out with their buddies instead of being in school. So if you think about the arguments against this thing, I think I could eviscerate every single one of them. I would love nothing more than to have a national debate with all these people and just knock it down once and for all. Because to me, if you operate with the premise that the kids are what need to be the focus here, then it really becomes very easy to work through the rest of the issues. And they're just, nobody's doing that. And they need to be called out for that. Everybody needs to be called out for that. And, you know, until they feel it and see it in the polling numbers and feel it in the pocketbook, I don't know if you get things to change. But you know what? I'm going to keep screaming at the top of my lungs about this to advocate for the kids, despite the fact that mine arguably, you know, we'll get through this thing, right? I mean, I can get a tutor for him, or I can do whatever I need to do to make my son's situation better. You know, that's not to say there aren't hardships and losses there for him as well. But, you know, I'm looking out for the people who just can't, you know, they have nobody advocating for them. So,
yeah, you know, Dave, extremely well said on all fronts. And that's why I asked you about the return to learn, which I've been covering, and I've been to a few rallies here, and you're starting to see, again, the tone and the language is elevating here, and to the point where, hey, one day a week is fine, but we got to get full time back. And that's what you need to see more of, that of that language where people are saying, no, that's not enough. We want more, and demanding that their school boards take note of that, which is also another thing. I don't think we've learned a lot about this, about, you know, civics and government power and how things work in this state, but certainly understanding the importance of a governor who is exerting himself into this debate, where in other states, I have no idea what the governor of Minnesota thinks about youth sports.
Right.
He was never quoted in any of the stories, you know, so, but in this state we do. And the motivation for Pritzker is one that he has sort of kept his own counsel on. And Dave, before we let you go here on this, what do you want to see happen immediately? And I know I've asked this previously, but just for our audience to know that things, to feel like, hey, there is some momentum towards this and why Thursday matters, because there's a lot of noise with lawsuits and injunctions and rallies. Okay, what really matters? Let's kind of get down to brass tacks here. But after, if you get the okay at whatever, 9 a.m. or whatever, sometime Thursday morning at the DuPage County Court, do you want to hear from the IHSA? I mean, will they have to release a statement at some point soon after that? And what do you want that tone of that statement to be, to feel like, hey, things are moving in a positive direction?
Well, I think that they've got to step up and show some guts. You know, I actually called for Craig Anderson to resign. I mean, nobody cares what I think, but at one of the rallies I was at, I just think, you know, you gave up your control. You shouldn't have done that. You're not advocating for the kids. You're not advocating for your clients, right? So you need to go. I think the same thing of these school boards. You know, I said that to the superintendent at Warrenville South. I said, look, man, you could talk to your blue in the face about how you care about this and care about that. But as a businessman in the real world, I'm looking at the results, and the results are you fail. You know, whether your intentions are good or not, I don't care what your intentions are. What are the results? You're failing. So I hope the IHSA grows a spinal cord and steps up and shows leadership and says, okay, the courts have said it's back in our control. We're going to resume playing sports in the fall. We're going to sit down. We're going to have a meeting. We're going to figure this out. I hope Governor Pritzker says, you know what, this is becoming a political liability for me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to publicly say that I hate Dave Ruggles, but I'm going to step aside and let this just kind of play out. And I'm going to blame Dave Ruggles and whoever else is involved with this thing if it doesn't go well. At least I'm free of the responsibility because the courts have weighed in. If that's what we get out of this thing, then I think it's full steam ahead. And I think what will happen is if we play in the fall, people will see the numbers won't go up, right? The infection rates, because we know that they won't, because we're seeing that across the nation right now. And so then when they see that the numbers aren't going up, this will kind of fade off into the sunset. All right. And then maybe we can resume with a real basketball schedule, a real spring schedule, you know, prom, homecoming, the things that kids will never get back if these things are canceled. Okay. But again, it comes down to advocating for the kids, you know, and are we going to make the kids carry the water for everybody else. And when I say everybody else, it really is a very small subset of our society that's really in danger if they catch this thing. If the wrong person catches this virus, it's terrible for them. I'm not a, you know, coronavirus is a hoax. I'm not, that's not who I am. But what I am saying is, if you look at the data, you know, four times as many kids be under the age of 18 die from the flu in a given year than they do from coronavirus. You know, it's probably 300 times more in a car accident. So there's a lot of things that there are bad things that happen to good people. But if you look at the risk that the kids have, it statistically is almost zero. And so we need to make sure that they are advancing. It's our job to protect that generation. You know, the older generation that's got some risk, they can protect themselves to some degree. We can do things to help protect them. But the reality is, we are here really to make sure that our kids are have a better situation than what we have. That's the way this country's been built. And right now, we couldn't be failing worse than this state at that.
Hey, Dave, love your passion, man. Love what you have to say. Love your knowledge. We'll let you go here. Really appreciate you coming on. And as a parent who of a high school senior, thanks for doing this on behalf of all kids. Because you know, advocating for kids, who can argue with that? I mean, people don't have to agree with everything you're saying, right? But we know what your intention is, and we really appreciate you sharing that with us today.
Thanks for having me on, fellas. Good luck. Hey,
Dave. Absolutely.
Dave, much appreciated. Thanks for coming on.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, man.
That is Dave Ruggles. Again, one of three parents filed a class action lawsuit in DuPage County Court on September 29th. And by October 1st, again, we're recording this on September 30th, should have some, at least that's what's been reported. The judge is going to hear this case, and we assume we'll grant some kind of a ruling. We'll either deny the temporary restraining order or we'll enact the TRO. And then we'll go from there, Joe, and then just buckle up, right, for the ride that just this return to play, return to learn, just keeps on going.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I don't expect anything to happen because that's what we've seen, right? We've just seen a lack of activity and a lack of, I don't want to say lack of understanding, but there, no one's budging here. And the calendar is just against us now at this point. I mean, it's fall. I mean, we are in fall. I mean, and it's getting dark early and things are ending. But I, like I told Dave at the end there, John, look, you don't have to agree with everything he's saying, right? I mean, and I don't think he expects people, everyone to understand. But when a guy is fighting for what he's fighting for, and that's the kids in this state, you know, you go. I mean, I really applaud him. And I think we need, you know, too many of us, I can't speak for other people, certainly, but a lot of people just sit back and maybe expect leaders to lead. We've talked about Pritzker, lack of leadership, whatever, you know, you agree or not, but this guy is at least leading a charge here and is a smart man. And, I thought he articulated his points really well. Again, whether you agree with him on everything or not is besides the point, but I always enjoy talking to and listening to passionate people like Dave Ruggles.
Yeah, and as you said, Joe, regardless of how you feel about how this is being handled in this state or in this country, I don't think anybody can argue with the core theme of what Dave and anybody who is attached their name to this lawsuit is, which is getting our kids back to some sense of normalcy here and learn and to stop being restricted towards really the most basic things that we expect in our country, which is to be able to have access to education, certainly number one for our kids, and certainly access to co-curricular activities, which would include, you know, activities if you're in the band. I know your daughter is a musician. I know that would be her not being out there on Friday nights and being able to play with her bandmates. Look, these things all accumulate. And I think I'm with you that I think this is more of something now for the winter. I unfortunately, if we can have a truncated football season, I'm all for it. You know how you and I are about football. We're football guys. Mm-hmm. Let's play and let's leave it up to the coaches and administrators and the stakeholders in these communities to figure it out somehow. If that means, I mean, we'll talk to athletic trainers. I'm sure they'll give you, hey, it's 10 days, 14 days, whatever it is. Get you back on the field sometime in October. But to me, it seems more this is moving forward about what do we do about the winter and the spring and getting through the 2020-21 calendar and cycle as best as we can, as seamless as we can. And, of course, the general overarching theme, which I think you get from Dave, which is stop with the government overreach, okay? Leave us alone. Don't tread on me, all right? Accept and honor our personal freedoms. And honor the fact that in other states in this country, they are figuring it out. There are some hiccups along the way. I think there's some games canceled. I think in Wisconsin last weekend, yeah. Indiana has had some games canceled. That's to be expected.
Right.
Okay, we're not going to have cases. So.
Yeah, and that's going to happen in 2021 too. I mean, again, it's not like all of a sudden, boom, it's January 1st of the election.
You deal with it now. You might as well deal with it now.
Yes, because people will think it's going to change whether you think things are going to change as soon as the election is over or as soon as the calendar strikes January 1st. It's not. So it's going to be we're going to be dealing with this for a long, long time. And I'm not talking just like through next summer. It could be longer than that. So let's start dealing with it already. I think we are all just fatigued by it all. And we need to start moving forward because we're not taking steps. We're not taking giant steps. We're maybe like a little, barely crawling here still, more than 6 months into it. So,
yeah. And Jill, one other thing too, is I think we're all just getting tired of the inconsistencies, that we're seeing. And I'm watching
everywhere.
I'm watching TV news last night. And I'm watching, again, this is not I'm not criticizing the reportage. Okay. Of the reporters or the television folks, but you're watching one newscast and you've got a reporter on there doing a live show who's wearing a mask in an outdoor with nobody around her, okay, in an outdoor area, and then you have another live shot of the same reporter in the same area who's not wearing a mask.
I know.
Okay, and you watch it, we're getting used to like the weather forecaster, like Cheryl Scott, ABC7, doing her right. forecast in her nice little breakfast nook there with the little poochie dog there sitting on her nice sitting chair. No, that's fine. Cheryl Scott, nothing wrong with looking at her, right? I don't
know.
Channel 7. I think we're kind of getting used to that kind of stuff, but those are the kind of thing that's just that we're all just going like enough is enough. And if you wear the mask, we understand that wear the mask, but how much are people actually paying attention to what the guidelines are that are being adjusted and what's going on there? And even with some of these schools that are still fighting the in-person learning, it goes back to Dave said, if you live in an individual community right now and your kids are not in school, read what the Illinois School Board of Education guidelines are, okay? And read what they are updating that every single month and they're loosening some of those restrictions. And you need to check that with what your school district, what their return to school guidelines are. And if there's conflicts, or you have to let them know that. And so people have to start, and I think they are, Joe. And I think you're seeing more of these things in different communities, return to learn, return to play. And I applaud these people for kind of speaking out and beginning to ask for what they want. And we just heard Dave Ruggles for a half hour, and he's a guy who's certainly asking for what he wants and advocating for individuals that really kind of go beyond his specific community. This is a guy who seems to have a real passion for young people.
Yeah, no, I he was the right guy to get on, Joe. We like to get people on who are opinionated, who can talk and are passionate, and understand what they're not just going to spew everything and say I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. That was him. So I think it was Larry King once said, what makes a person a good interview a good interview subject is someone like who could be self-deprecating, who has a sense of humor, who has a lot to say. I think he pretty much, he wasn't being funny today, but Dave Ruggles, but he was really, he had a lot to say, and agree or not with what he was saying, I enjoyed listening to him today, John, on this podcast.
Sioux Falls, South Dakota, hello. An old Larry King reference there for those who are old enough to remember good old Larry, who I think is still doing something, Joe.
He's still alive. I mean, he's doing, yeah, I'm sure he'll, you know.
Yeah.
He's probably doing a podcast.
Him and Dan Rather are doing a podcast.
He could have been the moderator last night doing the presidential.
So maybe Dave was on the Dan Rather show last night or something like that. Larry King. Anyway, well, good stuff. Hey, again, want to thank our guest, Dave Ruggles, Wheaton businessman who came with the passion today and spoke with really eloquently, I would say, certainly in terms of making his points.
I agree.
And we got something new out of Dave. I know he's been doing a lot of media interviews, but certainly with the lawsuit being filed, got some good stuff out of Dave. And we're going to continue to talk about this and follow the story because it is the story of 2020. And if we're talking about sports and education and a little bit of politics too thrown in there, John and Jill are going to be talking about it. So that's going to do it for today. And as always, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of the John and Joe Show. For Joe, I'm John. Say goodbye, Joe.
See ya.